And today we have a guest which has never been on the podcast before. He's a good friend of mine, and he is the new regional director for the Midlands. His name is Gary Matthews. Welcome, Gary. How are you doing, brother?
You big boss, man.
I'm all right.
I'm not doing too bad, brother. Not doing too bad. So, first of all, Gary, I'm just going to fire a few personal questions to you, a bit like a Bobby in an interview room.
No comment.
Brilliant. So first of all, can you just share a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you came from and what you're doing now?
Yeah, sure. So as you say, my name's Gary. Talking about Bobbies, I just drove home then from work and I got to my house and the police was sat outside. I was like, oh man, they've caught me. They've caught up with me. I was like, not now when I meant to do this interview with you and this podcast. But yeah, it was outside. Actually, they was outside because my neighbour, he left his wallet in his car overnight like you do. Somebody got broke into his car, nicked his wallet, shooting around garages there, clicking it off and like getting the petrol. Don't leave wallets in cars, innit? Yeah. So my name's Gary. I live in Leamington Spa in Warwickshire, but I've not lived here all the time. Do you want me to tell you where I grew up and stuff like that?
Yeah. Where did you grow up?
Yeah. So I grew up. So you're in the northeast, mm-hmm. where the sun's always shining. Mm. I was across the way a little bit in the northwest where the sun's never shining. Mm. So I grew up in Blackpool. I was born on somewhere called the Grange Park Estate, which is I used to be a quite a notorious estate in Blackpool. It's still there, actually. I think they've done a lot of renovation there, though. I think it's got a little bit better. So I was born there and I lived there till I was about 5 years old with my mum, my dad. There was five kids. And then, so my mum was from Blackpool, so I was born there. And then we moved to Manchester when I was about 5 years old, because my dad was from Manchester, so he had like family there. So we moved there. We moved to an estate called Newton Heath, which Newton Heath was about 3 miles away from Manchester City Centre. Newton Heath's quite famous, actually, because Manchester United, they had their first ever football ground there. In Newton Heath. We used to live across the road from it. It was about three minutes walk up to this old football field. And we used to nick motorbikes and drive them around this field. That was like a field to drive nick motorbikes on. And yeah, so that was, so we lived in Newton Heath, a big council estate, big mixture of working class and benefit class. So I lived there until I was maybe about 10 years old. So for about 5 years. And then we moved back to Blackpool. And then when we was in Blackpool, we lived on like different estates, different areas in Blackpool until I was around 2006. And then in 2006, I moved to Coventry. And then from Coventry, I've ended up in Leamington Spa.
Brilliant. So what was your life like then growing up on the estate in Blackpool? it was your formative years where you went from a boy to being a man. And so what did life look like for you as a young man?
Yeah, I'm still not sure I've got to that man bit yet. So from my years in Blackpool, I don't really remember much of that. But my years in Manchester, it was rough, man, to be fair. Do you know what I mean? I just remember, like, so my earliest thoughts was just fear. I just remember feeling loads of fear. So we was like a family that moved on to a council estate. And sometimes that's hard to do because, like, a lot of council estates are very cultural. You've got, like, many families, generationals of families, and, like, they all grow up together. So we was like a family that just moved into this estate, didn't really know anybody. But we got to know people. And I just remember, like, most of my growing up, my earliest thoughts was either I seen a lot of violence, a lot of crime. It was a single parent family. Do you know what I mean? My mum and dad split up. So we was kind of like benefit class as well. I never really thought about benefit class. And so we was having a conversation a few weeks ago at the pastor's retreat. So yeah, so in Manchester, it didn't take me long to be rebellious. Do you know what I mean? I was very rebellious. And I started to smoke at a young age and I started to drink at a young age as well. So I was hanging around with people much older than me. So I was maybe 8, 9, hanging around with people like 14, 15 on the estate. And I had all this thing of fear. And I remember my first drink that I ever had, it took this fear away. I was really poorly off it, but it took this fear away, to be fair. And then after that, I was just like 9 years old, you know what I mean? It was just crazy. And then I used to like, I got a job when I was 9, 10 years old on a market in Manchester. So my mum used to take me to school and I'd run out. She'd put me in one door and I'd get off out the other door. And there was a market there all day, market 3 days a week, Monday, Thursday and Saturday. And I used to wag school and go and work on this market store selling nappies. It was crazy, man, 9 years old, 10 years old. And then I didn't get another job then until I was 27. Do you know what I mean? And I used to go to this market, sell nappies. It was just crazy. But yeah, when I was about 10 years old, we moved back to Blackpool. And then we moved in like different areas of Blackpool, different estates and stuff. And then my drinking and drug taking just carried on, to be fair, even through my teenage years. I was drinking, I was taking drugs. I was like wagging school, I wasn't doing much school and stuff. And then I was getting in trouble with the police a lot. And because I was so young though, there wasn't a lot they could do. So I thought like I could get away with everything. And then I started to get like in more trouble with the police, and then I got remanded to like local authority, and I'd get like, they'd come and see me, but they couldn't, much really they could do. But then they started to like put me in like remand houses in different places. And then when I was about 15, I went to prison for the first time. And then I was like, I remember it was just there for the weekend. It was like, I got remanded on the Friday and I got out on the Monday. And on the Monday, they put me in a secure unit. So then I got in this secure unit, and for drinking, for taking drugs, and just being an absolute nightmare in the society, to be fair. Do you know what I mean? In the council estates that I was living on. And then I remember when I was like 16, I got 15 months in prison. And I went to prison, and prison wasn't a massive new thing for me because I grew up around people that had been in and out of prison. I grew up around drug addicts and I grew up around criminals. That was just like my culture. That was just normal to me, to be fair. And then I got to prison when I was 16. And I remember on the way, I was crying my eyes out. I was like, I don't really want to go. I want to go home. And then I got there, and then the first few weeks was really difficult. But then I got into the routine of it. And I felt safe in prison, which is quite sad, to be fair. But I felt safe in prison. And then I got out of prison, and prison didn't change me. It didn't rehabilitate me. It didn't deter me or anything. And I got out of prison, and then I went back in prison, and I got out of prison, and I went back in prison. And then that was my whole lifestyle for many years. Do you know what I mean? With my family as well, with a lot of my friends. And then the areas where I lived, there wasn't so much opportunity there for us, to be fair. There was no gospel. I didn't hear the gospel. I didn't hear about Jesus. I'd been to church when I was in prison just to get out of my prison cell. And then I'd been to like, I was just like doing some silly things, man. Once I set a church on fire, do you know what I mean? Like all in vain. And I used to nick lead off church roofs, take it to the scrapyard. It was like, it was just really stupid. I was like, my drinking was just really out of control. And I'd be very violent when I was drunk. Without a drink, I'd be like quiet as a mouse. But got a drink in me and I was like very violent, and I'd be like causing people a lot of pain, a lot of fear. And then a lot of violence, yeah. And then back to myself as well. So I had a few kickings as well. I used to like get drunk, and then I'd like to fight when he had a drink. But I'd always get battered. I wouldn't win the fight, so I'd always get battered. And then that was just a cycle of life, to be fair. On the estate where I live, like, it would just be drinking, drug taking, sex. That was just the whole lifestyle. Like, you just, that was all there was to do, to be fair. And then I tried a few times to change. I tried a few times to like stop drinking and move to different areas, tried to move away to stay with my dad, and I just done it again. It took me with me.
What was the motivation for that? What had you become dissatisfied with the life, with fed up with being in prison, or what do you think was it that stirred in your desire to change and have a different life?
I think it was like sometimes because I just go crazy and I do something really bad, and I was remorseful for what I'd done at that time. I was sorrowful, but it wasn't enough to change me, because I'd stopped drinking and I stopped taking just for a few weeks, and then I'd do it again. There was like just something in me that drew me to just do it. I couldn't not do it. Do you know what I mean? And then I thought, I do want to change a life. I want to change this area and this area in my life, but I don't want to change that area. But if I could just like drink with all the without all the chaos, without all the madness, then that'd be great. So like, instead of drinking vodka, I'd try and drink just lager, and then I go crazy off the lager. And I'm not going to drink lager because I go crazy off that. I'm going to try cider. Do you know what I mean? So I was just like, whatever I tried, I went mad. And same with the drugs. So like, the drugs, I wasn't like a heroin addict or a crack addict. I was a drug addict. Whatever drug I could get hold of, I'd take. And and then I come to a point of just thinking that this is my life. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, I tried to take my life, and like, I tried to commit suicide. I don't know if I wanted to kill myself or if it was just like remorseful for stuff that I'd done, and it was a cry of help. Do you know what I mean? But it was just depression. It was just mental, to be fair. And I could have died many times. I had drug overdoses. I had some like serious scraps. And then, to be honest with you, prison saved my life on many occasions. So it'd be going crazy on the out, and then prison. I'd go to prison, and then I'd get all right in prison. Sometimes I'd take drugs in prison, but then I'd get out and it'd be a little bit calmer, but then it'd build up again, like a little volcano. Do you know what I mean? A few little ripples at the bottom, and then it would just explode. And then in 2006, I got myself arrested on purpose to go to prison. And then I went to prison. And then when I was in prison, I started to work with a drug worker and an alcohol worker. Not really thinking, oh, what, I stopped taking drugs. I don't even know really why I wanted to work with them, but understanding God now and Christianity, I believe that God put them in my path. Because I feel like that time of my life, if I would have gone back to my hometown, I'd either now be dead or I would have been lifed off. That's just the way it was going, do you know what I mean? It was like family feuds, warfares and all that. It was chaotic, to be fair. And I went to prison in 2006, and I started to see this drug worker, and she said, "You want to go to rehab?" And I was like, "I want to go to rehab. I'll go. And then, so I had a choice of going to a rehab in Coventry or in Manchester. And I thought, I don't want to go to Manchester. Send me to Coventry. And my whole mindset was like, I'm not going to go to rehab. I'm not stopping drinking, stopping taking drugs. That's just my life now. Do you know what I mean? When you're in that prison, in that cycle, it's just the same people doing the same things over and over again. And I thought, that's just my lifestyle now. So I've gone to prison and I've done it. And I've gone to rehab in 2007 in Coventry. And this rehab was, I just thought, I'd get to rehab, I'd get a flat, I'd get away from my hometown and I'd be all right. So I've gone to this rehab, and they've picked me up from prison, and I've gone to this rehab in Coventry, and it's a Christian rehab. But 12 step, you have to go to like NA, Narcotics Anonymous, and Alcoholics Anonymous. And you could go to church. You didn't have to believe in Christianity. You didn't have to go to church. So I've got to this rehab, and so they told me after it, when they picked me up, they were thinking, oh man, this guy's going to be a nightmare. Do you know what I mean? So they told me later on, this like, this man, how are we going to cope with him? I was like, I was a bit crazy, man. I'm like, and then I've gone to the rehab, and the rehab was just crazy, to be fair. Most of the guys in there were taking drugs. They were taking drugs. Like, they were sleeping with the staff. They was like going out. So the night staff, women were sleeping with one of the lads. They'd go out on a Friday night nightclubbing with a resident. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is a place to like help you try and get sober and clean. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm in this rehab. And like, I'm the only guy there that was not taking any drugs. So I was giving them my wee for the wee test. And I'm the one that they was thinking is going to be the hardest work. I was the easiest one there. So, like, I've gone through this rehab, and I was kind of listening, but not listening to him. And I'd done an Alpha course, and I went to a few church events with him. And like this pastor used to come in, so they had a few Christian workers, and he was telling me about this man, Jesus died for you on the cross, and that Christianity is true, and like your problem isn't addiction, and your problem isn't drinking, your problem's sin, like you're sinning, you need to repent and turn to Jesus. And I'm like, mate, you're crazy. What you're on about, do you know what I mean? I was not interested. So I've left this rehab. The rehab closed, actually. And then I got a shared house with this guy from the rehab in a council estate in Coventry. And then when I left the rehab, I just went bang on it again. I was just like bang on the drugs again. I started smoking crack cocaine, drinking cans of Tennent Super, back on the vodka, and like taking drugs like Subutex, lots of like people take in prison. It was like crazy, do you know what I mean? And then, but I remembered then, like, my life just spiraled out of control again. And I kind of remember what they said to me in the rehab about this man called Jesus. They said something like that, those that call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. So I cried out. I was like, God, Jesus, if you are real, please do something. I'm so sorry. I can't live like this anymore. I can't change me. Nothing happened. I was expecting, like, do you remember the old National Lottery advert? A big hand comes out of the sky and it says, it's you. I think I was expecting something like that, but that didn't happen. But I remember a few days later, I stopped swearing. My language was absolutely disgusting. It was vile. I think every other word was a swear word. And I just stopped swearing. And then something happened within me, and I didn't want to take drugs anymore, and I didn't want to drink anymore. And then he had this desire to go to church. And then I started to like float around different churches in Coventry, but I was just like, I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I was just like, I was in and out of these churches. And then I ended up going to another rehab in Wales. So I went to this rehab in Wales, and there was no NA. There was no AA. It was Christianity. This is Jesus. This is the gospel. And you had like 3 Bible studies a day, and it was great. Do you know what I mean? So it got me into the Bible. It got me into learning how to pray. And then when I was there, like, I stopped smoking, come off antidepressants, got baptized, and I started to hear about the gospel and who Jesus was. So I was there for about 13 months, and then I left there, and then I moved to the town where I'm in now, Leamington. But prior to going to this rehab, there was a church in Leamington which used to run a course called the Pathway Program. So that was for like, it's quite a middle class church, but it had a pathway program for trying to work with drug addicts or alcoholics or homeless people or people that have not come from church and they've got issues, to try a pathway through to Christianity. So I tried to apply for it before I went to this rehab, but they wouldn't have me on it because they said I'm too much high risk. But when I left the rehab, they let me on it. So I left the rehab. But I met some Christians from a church before I went to rehab, and I stayed in contact with them. And then they let me move in with them. These Christians, they didn't know me from Adam, do you know what I mean? They let me go and move in with them. I thought, that's crazy, man. So they let me go and move in with them. In previous life, no one had had me in the house. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, he ain't coming in my house, man. He'd be nicking off us. But like, I've gone to live with this couple. And then I got a flat in Leamington. And then, like, I lapsed again. I went back on a crack and that, and I started, like, spending all my in rehab, you're in Cottonwood, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're, like, you're comforted, and, like, the temptation's not there, to be fair. It's been taken away for drinking drugs and all that. So I've left the rehab, and I've got a flat, and was doing a bit of voluntary work. I've never really had a job apart from when I worked on the markets on the nappies. And then I relapsed, and I spent all my rent money on crack and on drink and stuff. And it just like, it broke me, to be fair. But the church supported me through it. And then, yeah, I just didn't want to do that anymore. And then I started to do voluntary work, and I wanted to get a job. So God had changed me. It says in the Bible, let him that steal no longer, but get a job and work with his hands to give to those in need. And then God gave me a desire. He really changed my heart, and he gave me a desire to get a job. And I found it really difficult to get a job because I've got a really long DBS because of my background, because of my choices that I'd made in life. And then I was really fortunate to get a job. So I was because I've got a disability. Well, they say it's a disability. I don't know if it is or not, but I'm deaf and I wear hearing aids. So I was working with a disability worker in the job centre, and they said, "Oh, there's this care home that's opening a new mental health nursing home, and they're willing to give people a chance that have got a background, but your background is quite a lengthy background, so I don't know if they'll give you a chance, but you can go along to it if you want." So I've gone along to this course, and it was like a 5-day course, and it was like preparing to work in health and social care. So I spoke to the guy before it, and he was like, "Finish the course, and then we'll have a talk about it, see how you get on." And I'd done the best on the course. It was really, really good, to be fair. I'd done the best on the course, and then he ended up getting a job in a mental health nursing home, looking after people with mental health. It's crazy, do you know what I mean? 27 years old, and that was when I was 27. And I got a job as a mental health nursing home. And then I got settled in the church, started to study a little bit. And then God just gave me a few different jobs since then. I've had some really good jobs, to be fair. I was running a cafe for a charity. So the charity in my local area. So I live in a nice area, but it's like there's loads of addiction and all that. So there was a charity there. I was running a cafe for him. So he'd have like homeless people, addicts coming to the cafe. I didn't really have a clue what we were doing myself, to be fair. But I was running this cafe, like teaching them all barista skills and all that kind of stuff. A few other jobs, trusted jobs, man. I ended up like driving a double-decker bus kitted out with computers as a youth worker. That didn't last long. I drove into a low-hanging branch and smashed the top windows. Oh, it was mental, man. But yeah, God's been really good to me. And then I met a lady from Poland. She didn't speak any English. I think that's why we got on so much. I met a lady from Poland. And I've been married 10 years. Married 10 years. It's crazy. And then I work for myself now. I look after old people. I look after people with dementia or Alzheimer's. It's crazy. From the life where I come from, the doors that God's opened, how much he has changed me. I generally love older people. I generally love those that struggle, what society might reject. Do you know what I mean? I had a job for a while working with young adults as well for the church. That was a really good opportunity and experience as well. So in the past, so this is how much God has changed me. Do you know what I mean? So I am, the Bible says that if any man's being Christ, they are a new creation. The old is gone, the new has come. The old me that was a drug addict and an alcoholic, these people that I go and look after now, I would have robbed shamefully. I would have stole off them. Do you know what I mean? But today, I've got keys for people's houses. They give me keys to look after them. They send me to the bank with their bank card and their bank number, their PIN number to get their money out. They trust me today. Do you know what I mean? That's how much God has changed me. That's how much God has transformed me. So, yeah, that's kind of like what I'm doing now. And then, obviously, you've just employed me as well. I was a bit shocked when you offered me the job, to be fair. I was like, is this right? But, yeah, it's exciting to see what God's going to do.
So, just explain a little bit how we came to meet. So I was at your wedding. I had the privilege to preach at your wedding to Anya 10 years ago. I can't believe it was that long ago. But I actually met you in Middlesbrough, not in Coventry or in Leamington Spa. So share a little bit about how you ended up in Middlesbrough and how we met.
Yeah, so when I was like started to go to church and stuff, I met a few different people. So, and then they was like part of an organization. I think it was called like Salt and Light Churches, like a different organization. And they used to do a year long Bible study. So I was really like passionate for the gospel and really passionate for the Bible. I didn't come from like any teaching. So like, I'm not very academic. I wasn't very academic then at the time. And then these people was like, why don't you do this year-long Bible course, which was in Oxford at the time. So I went to see the guy and he said, oh, we're not doing it anymore, but we'll do something called the Daniel Challenge in Middlesbrough. And then I was like, okay, so let's have a look at that. And then to be honest, though, when I first got saved, so like I grew up on council estates all my life. Yeah, I'm like council estate born and bred. And then when I got saved, I was like, I don't want to be on a council estate. I want to get off a council estate. And then I looked at Middlesbrough and he was like, oh man, do I want to go to Middlesbrough? Middlesbrough's full of council estates. But then I was asking God, what should I do? Should I go or not? And he said, yeah, go. I felt like he said, go. So then I gave my flat up, gave my work up, done that. And I moved to Middlesbrough to do something called the Daniel Challenge, which is like a year-long discipleship course where you do a little bit of theology studying and you serve different ministries, lots of mercy ministries, to be fair. So that was in 2003. So I've moved to Middlesbrough, and that's where I met you. I'm not sure if I met you. So I remember chatting to Graham Seed in the Oakwood church. I'm not sure who actually introduced me to you or introduced you to me. Was it Graham or did we meet at the Oakwood?
No, we met at Southbank Baptist Church. Yeah, because I think you'd been doing some youth work or sharing your testimony with a guy, and he popped into the church just before we finished doing some youth work. And we just started chatting, and you said you were staying up in Nunthorpe, and I was running a Bible study. This was just before we planted New Life Church, and remember Big Paul? We were running a Bible study at Big Paul's house. Yeah, and then we just started hanging out and out for meals. You'd come along to the Bible study and things like that. Yeah, and I tried to get you to stay in Middlesbrough, but you weren't having any of it.
I was asking you when I. It's because just before I moved to Middlesbrough, I met Anya, my wife.
Yeah.
So and then I moved to Middlesbrough. And then there I was am I going back? Am I not going back? I was a bit confused.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Good that I remember actually, we went to Stewart's Park. We were walking the dog and you were chatting about, do you go back and what have you? And yeah, you were talking about how it was serious. And if you go back, do you get married? And it was, poor Anya.
Yeah, I know, mate. I know. And then you come to preach at my wedding, which is really good. We watched a video of it, so it's been just not long ago, been 10 years, so we watched the video again. Yeah, it was good, man.
It was like the Eurovision Song Contest. I remember preaching and then you having to translate it for a family back home in Poland. That was pretty unique.
Yeah, pretty cool, man. It was really interesting. So there was a girl that got saved on that day.
Yeah.
She got saved and she's still going strong now. She's just sent us a wedding invitation, actually.
Oh, awesome.
She got saved that day. She's preaching, mate.
Yeah. Don't see anyone get saved in Middlesbrough, just in Leamington. class. Okay. Yeah. So, that explains a bit about your upbringing and your faith journey and how we met. But what was it like for the last 10 years then? In Leamington, which you say has a lot of addiction and still suffers from deprivation like any other part of the country, but it's still quite affluent and all the churches you went to were very middle class. So what was your transition like from a council estate lad to and Christian to a middle class church? How have you found that journey?
So I think initially I was very lucky to go to the rehab that I went to. Was that kind of transitioned me a little bit?
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So the rehab that I went to, they'd go out to different churches taking, leading the meetings where the lads could share the testimony and all that kind of stuff. But so it was a little bit of an introduction to church in a sense, but that was just you're just there on a Sunday and then come back. So I kind of knew a little bit what to expect. And then the church that I ended up going to for quite a while, it was a middle class church, but they tried to reach out to the working class. You had quite a few working class people there.
Mm.
But there was quite a few culture shocks and a few things that I struggled with at first, to be fair. So just the dress code, do you know what I mean? Yeah. How people dressed, because they're I'm going to church and a lot of people aren't dressed up in suits and stuff, ties and suits and stuff. I'm rocking up and I've got tracksuits on. And I've got my socks tucked into my trousers and a baseball cap just sticking off the top of my head. So I'm a bit the only people from my culture that wore suits were CID or my solicitor.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of a culture shock. And then, some churches have been all right, to be fair, but it was I struggled with the music. Some of the songs were just old hymns and the words not even in English.
Yeah.
Or old English. And I love the theology and the songs behind it, but I struggled with that a little bit. I still do, to be fair. And then I struggled with the terminology, a lot of what they were saying at the front. I just didn't understand it, to be fair. I didn't understand how they were like explaining the Bible with all these big fancy words. And I'm like, wow, man. Or they're like throwing words of Greek out in Hebrew. I'm like, mate, I struggle speaking English, never mind Greek and Hebrew. Do you know what I mean? And then, yeah, I'm like, and what I found difficult as well was people was nice. It was nice, and they was like, "Oh, do you want to come back? Do you want to come around for some food? Do you want to come around for dinner? Like, do you want to come around for dinner?" Oh, it was there. It was crazy, man. Yeah, but yeah, very different to the culture that I come from.
Yeah,
the only people that ever like invite you around is for a session or something. But,
mad. Yeah, so obviously you've come in from a different culture, and for me, I had like, it was like two layers of struggles when I became a Christian. There was many of the things that you said, so I felt there was like stumbling blocks from the middle class church. The middle class culture would present stumbling blocks for me, whether that was the dress code or the way people spoke and yeah, things like that. But I also brought plenty of stumbling blocks for myself, coming from a working class culture. Yeah. So what ways did you struggle? Because we've already heard that that middle class church had loved you, people had took you in, let you live in their home. So there was so much that the church has done to help you and to nurture you and to love you. But often I think as working class people or people who come from a different culture, a bit of a tough, unorthodox background, when we come to church, I think we can provide our own stumbling blocks, can't we? What kind of issues do you think from your past might have hindered your walk with God?
Yeah, so I think a lot of it was I didn't trust people. A real lack of trust. So I found it hard to trust the people that were saying, yeah, this is real and this is not. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then also, what I struggled with, so like from my past as well, I just need people to be real with me. I just need people to be real with me. Not sometimes I just need tough love, not just like, oh, Jesus loves you, Jesus loves you. I'm like, Gary, man, you're messing up. Stop it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I need telling the truth. Other stumbling blocks was just like, especially when I first started going to church and stuff after like leaving the rehab, I was just like, I was really unreliable. I wouldn't show up, I wouldn't turn up to meetings. I was lazy. Yeah, it was just like I couldn't be trusted to do what I said I was going to do. I wasn't reliable. I wasn't reliable. And then I'd hinder myself through my choices, my actions, you know what I mean? So like not taking drugs, not drinking, but I'd sit up all night watching absolute rubbish.
Yeah.
I would like stuff myself with like eating rubbish. And then I wouldn't do the things that I meant to do. I had no self-control. I had no discipline. And then he had to really start to learn all that self-control and discipline. And I thank God for that. So like, yeah, it's not been easy. It's not been easy at all. But
I think that self-control for me, coming from an addictive background, when you get off the drugs, I think you can pat yourself on the back and think, oh, I've got a lot of self-control, haven't I done well? But forget that. You haven't got any self-control at all. You've just switched
one
addiction for something else. So for me, it was the same, the food, and sitting up all night eating tubs of ice cream, watching junk on TV. And I was still trying to, I wasn't feeding the spirit. My primary goal when I was sad or angry, or often I just seek to feed the flesh rather than feed the spirit. And whether it was unhealthy physically, but unhealthy spiritually, I would often seek comfort in food, sex. It was how I felt physically and emotionally rather than spiritually.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real challenge for all of us as Christians. But when you come from destructive backgrounds like ours, I think it's even harder, that self-control. We from council estates generally live, you live for a day mentality. We don't plan for pensions. We don't plan for the kids going to uni. We just plan for getting wrecked on Saturday night. The furthest we look to is the weekend, I think. And it's just a whole mind shift that we've got to change culturally and personally and emotionally. And I think, how do we, like, so this story where we've seen you've grown, we've seen that a middle-class church who didn't have much experience with people from your background love and nurture and seeing how you've grown and developed. So how do we keep churches encouraged to motivate, to be motivated to work with people from our backgrounds, but also to have the wisdoms when to say, you're taking the mick now, enough's enough, and when to encourage people to say, come on, get yourself up off the ground, dust yourself off and move forward.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Because, like, probably like yourself as well, but I've been to churches as well that I failed, that I've got it wrong. Do you know what I mean? I've been to, like, churches where I've walked in and I'm like, I've gone there for a while and I've said to Anya, my wife, I'm like, I don't fit in here. So the church that I went to initially, that really supported me. They done it well, but then the church changed. And I think, like, my understanding of theology and the Bible started to change. Do you know what I mean? So then stuff they was doing that I didn't think was right, to be fair. So I left that church and we went to a different church. And I've been to some other churches that was, like, really super middle class. And the heart for people was good. But for me, walking into a church that is super middle class, just the way that they spoke and, like, the way that they dressed and everything, I was just like, I felt so different. I felt like it just didn't fit in. Do you know what I mean? So there's been some churches that I've been to that I've just not been, I found not helpful. And I think working with people from our background, it's hard work. It is hard work, but then the benefit and the treasure of it, do you know what I mean? It's like a treasure in darkness, isn't it? And how do you know when to stop and when not to stop? It's really difficult. We need a lot of patience, I think, and a lot of wisdom. So I remember, and I've worked with a few lads, and then I was working with some lads in this church that I was going to. And then you get people that come from a working class background into a church or a benefit class. They've never even, not even worked. They're just on benefits, and, like, they take drugs and they drink, or the lifestyle is just a bit chaotic. They come to the church, and, like, they come to the church for a few weeks, and then we start to expect perfection from them. They've been in the church for 3 weeks, and you want them to stop swearing, you want them to stop drinking, you want them to stop taking drugs, you want them to stop committing crime. I'm like, we do eventually want them to stop doing that if they confess faith in Christ Jesus. Do you know what I mean? But we can expect too much too soon from people, and we start demanding, oh, you shouldn't be doing this, you shouldn't be doing that, and then they disappear. We don't see them again because there's, like, too much pressure on them. But I think, I think churches, they need a lot of encouragement about how to, because the gospel don't change. The package is this, the packaging changes. Do you know what I mean? The gospel is the gospel. We're all sinners. We need a savior, whether we're from working class, middle class, or upper class. Mm-hmm. But I think the way that we reach these different classes is going to be different. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So how we relate to and reach out to working class people will be different to middle class people. And then I think we need to be wise of that when we invite them to church or when we reach out to them as well, because they're not going to get it all straight away. They're not going to understand our church language if we're speaking all a theological language without really explaining what we mean to them. But I think we can hinder the progress as well. We can hinder it by how we reach them, what we invite them to, what we do with them. So I think, I think reaching out to working class people, we need a lot of patience. We need a lot of compassion, a lot of understanding in doing that. And I think, when do we stop? When do we? So I've worked with quite a few guys, quite a few lads, reach out to them. And, like, you need to be prepared to be let down. I've been let down by a lot of people. Mm. So I've learned to, like, not to expect too much from people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to give them more time. And then there's some guys now, so, like, it was like we're trying to work with him for a long time, and now it's just like, no, he's just not interested. And then another guy I was working with, so I used to run this event where we'd, like, share testimonies and we'd share the gospel, and then we had a Facebook page, and then this lad read it. He was like a tough guy from Coventry in and out of prison, and then related to my story. So like, he started to come to this event, and then I started to meet up with him a little bit, done some shopping for him and all that, which I don't mind doing. But then he just like trying contacting me. I just wanted money, just wanted money, just wanted money. I was like, I just can't do that, mate. Do you know what I mean? I was like, I can't keep giving you money. And then he had to like say no to him. And it's like, it's individual as well, so not everybody's going to be the same. So like, there might be a line for this person, but a line might be different for somebody else. Or people, working class people's lives are different, and the culture's different. Even within that culture, there's subcultures, and the struggles are very different. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, so it's like, it's on an individual basis that we need to like be working with people.
Definitely. Like you say, even within the same family, that people getting saved have different issues, different desires, different temptations. It's yeah, there's no size, one size fits all, is there? I think, like you say, that compassion and wisdom and patience is needed, and decisions need to be made and tailored to a person rather than a particular culture, doesn't it?
Definitely. And I think that's why, what's good about Medius Ministries, isn't it? So like, there's a lot of people out there that want to work and reach out and share the gospel with working class people, with council estates. I was actually listening to one of your podcasts with Mez McConnell. It was really interesting, isn't it? Yeah. So like, 20 Schemes was the same, done it? It wants to reach out to working class people. Like, some churches don't really know how to do that. How do you reach a culture that you don't know nothing about, that culture? So it's good that Medius can support churches to be able to do that, or to be able to encourage them, to be able to give them wisdom. So if a lot of middle class people or believers go to a working class culture, they're going to find situations that they probably don't know how to handle. Do you know what I mean? If they've not come from a background where there's addiction or violence or domestic abuse or all this kind of stuff in the past, they can be like, what do I do? How do I cope with this? How do I support these people? So then it's good that they can come back to Medhurst and ask Medhurst for some support and some help as well in how to do this. People that have got a bit of an insight into that culture because they've lived it.
Yeah, and I think what I loved about the most recent pastor's retreat was there was quite a few. We were still in the minority, but we were a bigger minority than we have been in the past. There was quite a few working class lads there. There was myself, you, Ricky, Big Sam, and Mez. And I was just blessed to be around people who were my brothers in Christ, but also people who get me, who understand me, who were very much like me. More and more as we do these events, I no longer feel like the odd one out. I feel like I am part of this church, and hopefully the middle class guys don't either, because there's plenty of middle class guys there, and we'll work together in diversity. But just we've mentioned some of the problems of working class people and the need for patience and compassion. But what would you say, especially after spending time with a couple of working class Christians, are some of the unique cultural blessings that come from working class culture?
So I agree with it as well. So often I say to my wife as well, so like, a lot of the people I'm around now is like working class, is middle class people. Do you know what I mean? The church I go to is predominantly middle class. The people that I look after in my job are predominantly middle class. I live right on the edge of an estate, which is good, but I need to be around people like me. Do you know what I mean? So the working class culture is like, they bring a banter, they bring a humor that is different to middle class people. Do you know what I mean? I love the banter. So like, when we take the mickey out of each other, so like, we're kind of like men's men. So like, we don't say we love each other. Or I do now, I'm a Christian. But in that culture, you're just like, the more that you rip each other, the more you take the mickey out of each other, the more like, I'm saying I love you, man, I respect you, man. Do you know what I mean? But when I first like started coming to churches, even now today, so when I'm saying it to my wife, she don't get it. And I need to say, I'm only kidding.
Yeah.
I'm only kidding. And then even in some of like the churches that we go to, I'm like, I'm having a laugh, I'm having a banter, and they're like, "Is this guy real? Is he telling the truth? Is he not telling the truth?" Yeah, so to be around people like us was great, especially at the pastor's retreat. Do you know what I mean? It kind of felt, it makes you feel normal. It makes you feel like you're not so different, you're not so mad, you're not so crazy, because they understand. So I think, yeah, I think we can like bring a great humor. I think we bring great honesty as well, because we're generally like people that come from a working class background are quite honest. If you ask somebody like what's going on, what's your issues, they generally tell you. I find that a bit different in working in middle class. They don't really tell you what's going on. They don't really tell you the problems, or they don't want to share them. It's like, oh yeah, it's all right. We're working class people. We're honest with where we're at. And I think like we're passionate about what we do as well. When something happens good for us, man, when Jesus changes, or we're passionate about telling people, and we might not all be like super academic, but we're clever people, man, to survive out in the world. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, it's good that like to try and bridge that gap of the two. So there was some like really nice pastors that was middle class that lived at the retreat. Do you know what I mean? And like they've got a heart for working class people. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think it was good for us to sit and have dialogue. We were up till 2 o'clock in the morning with a couple of guys, weren't we? Just talking about different cultural issues. And I think the more of us from a working class and poor background, who whether it be benefit class or whatever, who are sharing our struggles and our cultural kind of identity and norms. Whereas before, I felt when I'd say things, people just thought, "Oh, that's Ian. That's Ian's opinion." Whereas when you get a broad working class a group of people sharing their cultural norms, it's not just Ian's opinion. This is actually a bigger cultural opinion and insight. I think what I've also found as well is like an intense loyalty from working class people, whether Christians or not, and it's a weird loyalty. Because I remember, like, we'd have family feuds, and we'd beat the living daylights out of each other. But if somebody hurt one of our own, then you stick
Back
together,
of
you
my head.
close ranks, don't you? Yeah, and I think that loyalty transfers with the working class Christians, who, because there's so few of us, many of us are spread far and wide across the country. When we come together, I think that's intensified, and deep friendships, I think,
I was thinking about that when I was thinking about this. I was thinking like the culture that we come from, man, people are cheating each other all the time. Do you know what I mean? Your best mate would sleep with your bird, or your would sleep with your best mate's bird. In a fight, or they need you to back each other up, you back each other up, man. You're there for each other. It's crazy.
Weird, I think it is. There's a lot of common grace, isn't there, from both the middle class and the work class cultures. And I think, sadly, so often when discussing reaching the middle, the working class, we often focus on the negatives, the addictions. I remember doing a seminar for some churches in the Northeast on how to reach the working class, and I give them some statistics to look over, and then I said, "What outreach do you think you could do to this community?" And they were like, "Oh, we can support single mums, we can support those on the dole, we can do food bank." And what they've done is they've focused on the negative statistics, and say there was like 30% single parents. Everything was focused on working with single parents. I was like, "What about the 70% that are married and living in traditional families? How are you going to be reaching them?" Yeah, there's 25% unemployed, but what about the 75% that are working? How are you going to, if you do everything during the day for the unemployed, how are you going to reach those of a night? So again, so often when we're focused on reaching a culture, we can again be have our blind spots where, and again, it's coming from a good heart, because a lot of people want to help those less fortunate themselves. So having a food bank isn't in and of itself a negative thing, but you're only reaching a tiny proportion of that community. So for me, where we live in Middlesbrough, because the majority of the church's outreach is focused on the poor and the addicts, the general working class guy doesn't think the church is for them. I'll have people get in touch with me and say, "Can you speak to my mate or my cousin who's an alcoholic or a drug addict or who's in debt?" And I'm like, "Hang on a minute, I don't need to be speaking to them, because you need Jesus as much as they do."
Yeah, I agree, and I think like that's what I think a lot of people think of when they think of like council estates or working class, innit? They think of like drug addicts and alcoholics, where probably like the higher proportion of those are not drug addicts, they're not alcoholics, they're just working class people trying to get by, trying to live their life in a culture that's like might not have loads of money. But even to be fair, even on some council estates where I live, man, some of them had quite a bit of money. They had good jobs. Do you know what I mean? They had good jobs, but yes, whether they've got a lot of money or they're a drug addict, a drug dealer, they work in a chemist, they all need Jesus because they're lost. Do you know what I mean? I think, like you were saying before, I think the more people that are getting saved and speaking up and God's using from our background, from our culture, because like we were saying before, in our culture, not everybody's a drug addict, to be fair. Do you know what I mean? So just people that are just like, just grow up on a council estate, just a council estate kid. They're just from a council estate. They need Jesus. God still loves them. And then the more of us that are being used by God to, I think like you was the podcast that I was listening to you and Mez was like, sometimes you have had to shout about getting funding as well to work on council estates, to work with these point things, because funding used to be quite difficult. That you had to make it like a big noise, but now like you're getting heard. Do you know what I mean? The council estate people are not getting forgotten, where most people think about maybe working class people, or they want to go to areas where it's safe to go to, and they forget about those that are on council estates.
Yeah, definitely. So just as we wind up this conversation, share a little bit about what excites you about work for Medis Ministries and what you hope to see happen through your role.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that Medus Ministries, it kind of like wants to reach people like me. Do you know what I mean? They're forgotten sometimes. We're coming from that culture, we can feel forgotten, we can feel neglected, we can feel let down, we can feel rejected. And there's so much treasure there. I've got a passion for working class people, council estate people. So it'd be great to work with Medus to be able to encourage churches to reach out to these people, to see more people like us saved. To maybe replicate and see what you've done around the Northeast. Lots of churches over there getting supported. You know what I mean? It's great to do that in the Midlands. There's some like really rough areas in the Midlands. There's some big council estate areas in the Midlands. So it'll be exciting to see what God's going to do through Medhurst Ministries, and hopefully I can use some of my personal experience from coming from these cultures. And stuff that I've learned along the way to be able to see God's kingdom grow through these areas. Do you know what I mean? Because they need to hear the gospel as well. And like a lot of them are often just forgot about. They just forgot about people. And there is some great treasures to be won out there in the darkness. So yeah, it's exciting to see. It's exciting to see.
Awesome. Yeah, it's exciting to have you on board as well, brother.
Go on, man.
Yeah, looking forward to working with you. Looking forward to seeing what God does in the Midlands and beyond. And again, we know that there's loads of great work happening throughout the country by churches who are doing stuff on council estates, and we just want to come alongside and share the resources we have, the knowledge we have, and offer any support we can. So if there's anyone listening from the Midlands who would like some support, who's already working in the working class areas, whether it be on council estates, inner city, or rural, we'd love to hear from you. We want to work as a partnership amongst other churches that are already doing a great work. Plus also, if there's any churches thinking about starting a new work, we'd love to try and work with you and share our advice and learn from you as well as we expand the work that we're doing with Medhurst Ministries in the Midlands and hopefully across the whole of England. Oh, Gary, it's been wonderful. I'm sure we'll be chatting again soon about the work that we're doing with Medhurst Ministries. But until then, thanks very much, and I'll speak to you soon, brother. God bless.
Cheers, mate. God bless, mate. Bye bye.
Bye bye.